Kia ora koutou, ko Sam Broughton, toko ingoa, kōra mātua o Waikerikeri. Hi, I'm Sam, the Mayor of Selwyn, and thanks for taking the time to listen to this, the first in a series of five podcasts unpacking the Future for Local Government review. The context of this discussion matters. In a post-COVID world, in an over-centralised country, where reform has been thrust on local government year after year, with unfunded mandates flowing through legislation that local councils then have to instigate, there's been no better time than now to think about what the future for local government might be. Actually, this would have been much better done about 4 or 5 years ago, before many of those reforms were started. However, we are where we are, and I'm excited about what the potential could be for this conversation to drive meaningful change that will improve community outcomes for our people and our environment. I trust that you've been excited by the review itself. If you haven't taken a look, please read the report. Really want to thank Jim Palmer, Gail Surgner and Sancho Jacobs for taking the time to discuss with me the panel's outcomes, their recommendations and some of the thoughts that go on behind it. I think it's an exciting place to be challenged and to think about what the future might look like, and I'm up for the conversation about what the opportunity for change is going to be. I trust you find this informative, that it sparks some thoughts and some conversations, and I look forward to receiving your feedback. But for now, let's jump into the conversation.
I'm here with Jim and Sanchia and Gail, three passionate people about local government. And to begin with, it'd be good to understand why you're involved in this conversation today and what's brought you to this place of caring about local government and wanting to be part of putting forward recommendations. Jim, you've chaired the panel, so maybe we'll just start with you. Give us a bit of your background and why you care so much about where we're at.
Yeah, thanks, Sam, and it's been an absolute privilege to be part of the panel. I think all of the panel members shared the exact same experience when they got contacted by DIA first up. When invited to participate, we all said instantly that would be lovely. And then when the phone went down, we thought, well, that was at least nice to be asked, but there'll be others. So you can imagine our delight and surprise when we got a call back to say, you're on the panel. And we all jumped at that and thought that was just an outstanding opportunity to contribute to a sector that we're all really, really passionate about. And you should see some of the panel conversations. There has been no shortage of passion as we've traversed the topics that we've had. Personally, for four decades now, local government has been really the sector that I've cared most about. While I had a couple of decades auditing, local government was the guts of that work. And more recently, a couple of decades with Waimakariri District Council. Most of that as chief executive. And it gets in your blood and you just become a passionate local government person. And it's about community. It's about doing great stuff for community and seeing the tangible difference you make. So that's what keeps me excited about the sector.
Cool. And Gail, you've worked with Jim over the last couple of years. Why did you decide to join the team?
Well, a bit like Jim, community and that interface between community and government has always been a key theme in my career. And I was pretty passionate about local government when we started this review, but I can truly hand on heart say I'm even more passionate now and see through the whole country the commitment and the community orientation of councils and the potential to do so much more if we can unlock the opportunities that our review has highlighted.
Great, thanks. And Sanchia, your role with Taitoura and as chief executive at Central Otago, you've sort of been on the sidelines of this, but feeling like we're feeding in feedback and information. You know, tell us a bit about your history and why today.
I think my background's both central government and local government, right? But now I would consider myself to be a local government practitioner because, like most of us, I got sucked in and now I feel like I'm deeply connected to the sector and the outcomes for local government. And then through this review, I've been really passionate about this review happening because I felt like this was the thing that should have happened first in all of the reform, the conversations that the sector should have and could have been leading right from the get-go along with central government. I've enjoyed being a part of it as part of Taitora, as the president there, in my role at Central Otago District Council, and also as sort of part of a working group, helping to provide some advice up as well. I'm passionate about this because it feels to me like an increasing number of councils are a person away from failure in some parts of their business, and it's getting tougher and tougher all of the time. And I'm really excited about the report because I feel like it provides a pathway towards a world-class future for local government in Aotearoa.
So it sounds like we really need this. Is that true? Like, how broken are we? And, you know, is this something that actually lands in a space where actually things are pretty much all right, and you guys have just spent 2 years working away, and we'll just carry on as we are? Or do you think there's a real need for change?
I think local government's surviving under really difficult conditions, and that's a lot to do with the commitment of people and the belief in local government. But that's not enough for local government to thrive. And I think our report is about resetting the conditions for local government so it can really thrive and reach its full potential.
Yeah, Gail, I'd concur. And while our report, you know, has a dose of, I suppose, criticism of all, it's really not laying the fault at council's door. It's a whole of system issue that's been building over the last couple of decades, the unfunded mandate challenges, the constant pressure that's coming from natural disasters in particular, and many of the other issues that we're facing daily. You know, Sir Geoffrey Palmer, when we had a conversation with him, said, you know, this is about realizing that the world is changing, and the fact that polycrisis is now becoming the norm in our lives, we need to be so much more adaptable, and the awful word resilient, and being able to deal with that for and on behalf of our communities. And it requires us to be thinking differently. So it's not only about the pressures of today, which are really where councils are really struggling, and there's a huge number of fantastic people in the sector, but it's what's going to come at us, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any easier despite our best hopes.
So where does nothing, you know, if we do nothing, where does that get us? If we think this is a report that just gets shelved, what's the lost potential outcomes here?
Oh, well, as a panel, obviously we'd be pretty disappointed if the report get picked up and run with strongly. I have a sense, and we haven't tried to forecast that, but intuitively, in the conversations I've had, many of them, they wouldn't disclose themselves as conversations, but many would say the system is under huge pressure or near broken. Give it a decade or so, and there will be failing councils. If we have the continuing pressures that are on us with no relief and no fundamental change in sight, then I'm pretty confident that within a decade we'll be back here having exactly the same conversation, just being that much closer to the cliff.
And the casualty in all of this will be communities. So communities deserve the best councils they can get, and councils that really enable local people to grapple with the big challenges, like everything from the cost of living crisis to the big climate change and intergenerational challenges of biodiversity loss and, yeah, what's happening to the planet. And those challenges can't be solved just at a central government level. They need local and central government, community, business, iwi and hapu, citizens, all to be contributing. And local government, with its proximity to community, with its local knowledge, with its key relationships, has such a vital role to play in enabling positive change to the big challenges.
Well, I think local government succeeds in spite of the challenges, and there is many wonderful things that get delivered, and we see that when we have those sort of annual Local Government New Zealand and Taitora awards, and you see the things that councils are doing even despite the challenging situations. I guess what sits in my mind at the moment is how do we communicate the findings of this report in such a way that people feel motivated to embrace change rather than run from it? And there will be some people across the sector who probably feel a little bit reticent about more change, and there will be some people that the sector in its current format serves quite well. And so how do we invite the turkeys to Christmas in a way that they want to come, in a sense? Not that I'm calling anybody in local government a turkey, but thinking about it in that context, how do we really engage people in these recommendations in a way they understand it and want to drive it forward?
Yeah, that's right. And I think, too, change is happening to us and will happen around us, whether or not we want to embrace it. And this is an opportunity to think about how we make change best work for our communities and actually be part of the conversation and leadership of that happening, whereas what we've experienced over the past 3 or 4 years is change that will have big effects on councils, which affects communities, but out of our control, feel like happening to us. And Sanchi, you sort of touched on that earlier about this piece of work sets up the framework for all future change. And so if we can actually think about what parts of this need to happen early, which parts of this are going to be a bit more difficult and are going to need some time and some further conversation, but not delay the easy stuff because we want to do it all at one time, I think we're going to have, you know, a better opportunity for outcomes that we can manage rather than just be fearful of change on top of the change's sake. Report came back and you've sort of landed in five different areas, one of them being embedding local government's purpose and wellbeing focus. Can you just touch on like why those five areas and what stood out to you to be able to even package them up in that way?
We had many slices and dices of our report and how best to try and package it. And really, this was packaged for a summary of recommendations, trying to make sense of the recommendations. And actually, the package of the five, really, the rest of the report doesn't necessarily follow in that order or in that construct. So it was a way of helping people as they read our executive summary and our recommendations to sort of see, okay, these recommendations related to these themes, and trying to help people get their head around it as they were thinking about what is the collective change that we're proposing.
All the way through the review, we've tried to listen to the diverse voices of local government, community organisations, hapu and iwi, and central government leaders. So the interim report had a lot of influence from the initial soundings that we did with local government. And then the draft report was our work in progress after synthesising what we heard in our various meetings with councils around the country. And then the final report was influenced a lot by the submissions that we got from councils, community organisations, business organisations, hapu and iwi, and some passionate New Zealanders. So those themes really have been the themes that have followed us through the whole review. And we've put them out there, we've tested some of those ideas, and we've really listened to what people have fed back to us.
Cool. I think so much of this conversation needs to be about the future form of government for New Zealand. And so while your focus has been on the future for local government, actually there's a number of pieces here that require government to change too. And as we discuss that, obviously the conversation about the dirty A word, boundaries between amalgamation, I mean, that comes up regularly. Boundaries between councils, devolution of responsibilities and decision making. It can't just be a council conversation, it needs to be an all of government conversation too. And I feel like the boundaries piece and the funding are like the two spaces that gets all the oxygen in this conversation. But actually, your recommendations are much broader than that. And embedding local government's purpose and wellbeing focus to change the legislation and introduce new provisions within the Local Government Act kind of set the scene for this being more than just tweaking some stuff. There's some, if we're talking the purpose of local government, that's that's coming down to settling on something that remains constant so that decisions can be based on certainty rather than an ever-changing government cycle around what they may or may not want local government to deliver. So what was your thinking in that space around the changes within the LGA?
Yeah, thanks, Sam. And you know, you're right. This is a whole of system change that's required, and it requires there requires to be lean in from both local government, but importantly, central government. And one of the frustrations that we heard repeatedly is a sense of where does local government fit in the system? Often a sense that we're second-class citizens in the government of New Zealand and don't get the opportunity, we don't get the recognition or respect that's required, or have the certainty that the place of local government is valued in our democracy. And so a theme of our recommendations was around providing certainty. And again, we had a fantastic conversation with Sir Geoffrey Palmer about the whole constitutional debate and the place of local government in our constitution. And we tested our thinking with him, and that proved very valuable. Ideally, in terms of a constitutional setting, it would be great to be able to have a constitution that embeds local government in our democracy. Currently, though, there's no appetite for that conversation across the political spectrum, and it might be some time before that occurs. Given that, we then thought, well, how best do you do that? And so the concept of giving certainty to local government's mandate and purpose is something which has been a fraught issue in the sector for the last decade, where the purpose changed. And while some said, well, it didn't really make any difference to us, we ignored the change in the purpose that was promoted in 2013, and we just carried on and did what we did anyway. What it did do is rattle the sector in terms of, you know, well, what are we here to do? And we're a long-term business. And while some of our long-term business is known, some of the really important business of local government, which has always got a little bit of a shadow around it, you know, the contribution to social and economic well-being in particular, are ones where councils are never quite sure what their role and responsibility is vis-a-vis central government and other agencies. We thought we should make it absolutely clear that well-being, all of the well-beings as they're currently defined in the Act, and we thought the Act's definition of well-being, you know, was pretty good, as was the purpose in terms of enabling democracy for and on behalf of communities. We thought that current purpose statement in the Local Government Act was good. So how do we lock that in? And we went for double entrenchment. And Gail, being a lawyer, is able to better explain double entrenchment than I, but it's certainly a way of providing some certainty in the interim until that constitutional debate occurs.
I think we're realistic that double entrenchment is a really big deal and may not get the cross-party support that it needs to be in the legislation. But what we also wanted was a conversation about the wellbeing purpose of local government, so that it could give people working in local government, elected members, mayors, confidence that councils have a really important role to play in the four wellbeings. And we were very intentional about using the word intergenerational wellbeing. So it's not just about wellbeing today, but it's wellbeing today and for future generations. And we've also been clear in the report to describe what the big challenges are that play out in place. And in places, the silos of government dissolve, and the issues that impact on people, place and the environment. And local government can cut through the silos and provide the sort of leadership that I think really enables communities, citizens, and all the other people with an interest to come together to grapple with the issues that unique in the context of a local place. So there's no one size fits all for communities. And we really saw that. We had the great privilege of connecting with people from Invercargill to the far north and everywhere in between, and being able to see firsthand how different New Zealand Aotearoa is, and how the issues, those big issues, play out in different places is really different. So local leadership is vital in helping to provide that system leadership and support.
And while we're thinking about wellbeing for communities, you know, there's so many of us involved in that, whether it's councils and NGOs and central government and volunteer groups. There's all sorts of contributors there. Sanjay, you've seen, you know, from both central and local government side around trying to serve people, everyone trying to do their best for a space. One of the recommendations is around aligning wellbeing priorities and investing together into communities. Are you seeing that working well at the moment? Are you seeing this space for improvement there? When you heard the recommendation, you're like, oh yeah, or hold your horses, things are all right. Where were you?
I think that the relationship between central and local government in some ways is much improved. And when I first started in central government, I was acting for New Zealand from Wellington. It didn't really occur to me to think about the place-based impacts of the work and the decisions that were being made around the work that I did. And I think there's much more awareness of that now. But on a spectrum of 0 to 100, there's still 80% of that to go. So there's a lot of work to be done between, I think, central and local government understanding each other better in that space. And I guess what this comes down to is both sides being willing to put a little bit of power on the table, to give it up a little, to come together towards those shared outcomes. So there has to be a fundamental cultural shift that is backed up by all the frameworks and the systems and the legislation. And I think that's what's great about the idea of double entrenchment, is that it sort of gives that sort of policy certainty, legislative certainty, but people still have to let down their guard a little to come to the table to talk about those place-based wellbeing priorities and the investment they're both willing to put in it from all sides of government and other parties that need to come to the table for some of those conversations as well. But in answer, I guess, more directly to your question, Sam, I thought, hallelujah, that's a really great conversation for central and local government to come together to have.
Our reflection, and we see it right across the country, is where central and local government work well together, it's almost entirely based on the quality of an individual relationship to people who somehow click, who have had a past history together, who are then able to, there's some trust and confidence already there, and they're prepared to use their influence to shape outcomes for communities. And too often we see central government, and you know, and I'm not criticizing them unduly, but the central government in their silos delivering what they believe is best for New Zealand's community, but like what Sancha said, you know, thinking about how do you deliver for New Zealand Inc., and we're all homogenous, so a community receives the same response from central government, from the far north to the deep south. And so the opportunity to think about that in a different way and bring the outcomes and objectives and priorities that are at place important. And we had our recommendations are asking central and local government to align wellbeing outcomes, priorities and investment. In the 2002 Local Government Act, we had things called long-term council community plans, and that required local government to work with partners, including central government, to work out what those outcomes were. And then there was a directive that we all should get together and work on those outcomes that are important at place. Well, that lasted for about 3 months, I suppose. There was a couple of meetings with some government departments down at the council, and we had a good conversation about it, and there was no obligation or commitment to do any more. And you know, we've looked around the world and seen what else is there. There's a Welsh model, which has got some really promising aspects of it, but it has, in my mind, the same matter that sat in the 2002 Act, which is there's no compulsion on anybody to do anything. So we're signalling that there needs to be a commitment or almost a duty for central government and local government to come together and agree and align the outcomes, priorities, and then how they're each going to invest at place to deliver what's great for communities and what's needed for communities.
Hey, Jim, could I just pick up on your comment about the individual relationships that are often the genesis for where good collaboration and partnership happens between central and local government? And you've made some recommendations in the report around secondments and deeper kinds of relationships that could happen between central and local government that could embed some of those, I guess, individual relationships, but also understanding of each other's systems. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
It was great to be able to talk to a number of executives in local government in particular who had worked in central government at some senior roles in central government, had come to local government. They all said, without prompting, that had they had the opportunity to be involved in local government earlier in their career, when they went to central government, they would have been a far better executive. And as a result, when they come back to local government, that they're really sought after by local government, because local government, you know, really just doesn't get central government, how it operates and what the machine of Wellington is and how to work the machine. And those people do have a greater sense of that, and that really makes a difference in terms of what you're asking and expecting. So any opportunity to strengthen the ties, and that's usually through some long exposure, you know, whether that's secondments, joint training, more forums where we're talking about the issues and getting to know people, ultimately does make a significant difference.
I think there's an issue of pace there too, right? Sorry, Gail. I think there's an issue of pace there too. Local government is often on a slower burn, I think, than some of the relentless pace that has to be kept in Wellington by central government. Those sorts of things are really helpful to understand about the pressures that each other is facing.
Before joining local government, I spent about 8 years in central government, and the last 10 years very much in the middle of local and central government in that dynamic. And I agree with Sancha that there is more recognition now of the need for place-based approaches, and there's definitely more central government presence in regions. But what hasn't shifted is a sharing of resources and power with local government. There's still a very strong attitude from central government that they have the answers or the solutions and can work with others, but they've got the levers and the resources. And we really see that the potential of local government won't really be unleashed unless some of that power and resources are shared. And that's why we've looked for legislative change. And also, some people would say, the new relational entity, why do you need another bureaucracy? And won't it just be filled up with bureaucrats and it'll just be another barrier between local and central government? Well, we thought very hard about that, and we're very hopeful that a small relational entity will be able to provide the infrastructure to reset the relationship. A toolkit or a training course or even a great program of secondments and supporting leadership and talent across local and central government won't be enough. We really firmly believe that it needs the kind of capacity, capability, mandate and infrastructure to seriously change the way that local and central government work together.
Thanks for listening. I trust that this has been informative and helped you understand more about the review. I trust also that it's helped spark some conversations and thoughts about how you might implement change in your community. I really want to thank the panel for all the work that they've done. Jim Palmer, Penny Hulse, Antoine Coffin, Gail Surgner and Brendan Boyle. We really appreciate the effort, the thought, the research and planning that's gone into this, and obviously all the staff that sit behind the review too. Thanks to Sanchia for being part of the conversation team. Really appreciate your thoughts. To all elected members and executives, anyone that works inside councils, thank you so much for what you do to make your communities awesome. Thanks to LGNZ and the team of staff there doing an amazing job to serve local government across Aotearoa. I look forward to listening and discussing and debating and implementing all the recommendations that have been put forward in this review. Thanks for listening.